Welcome to The Sports Bubble, a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. My name is Jensen Karp, and I'm a sports fan and an amateur website refresher. I've never pressed F5 more than I have over the past week. I'm hungry for updates as leagues get ready for their comeback or fail miserably in the process. Someone on Twitter whispered the words Newton and the Patriots, and I was trying to get a verified confirmation of that miracle for the next hour. Teams like the Denver Nuggets have closed their practice facilities as coronavirus numbers are on the rise, and players like Ian Desmond are becoming vocal social activists with Instagram posts that will forever change their lives. For a time where there's very little sports being played, it sure feels like a lot is happening. So I continue to talk to athletes and sports industry professionals about what they're doing during this very weird time. Someone has to keep track. This is The Sports Bubble with Jensen Karp. The name Jerry Stackhouse is synonymous with basketball. He's considered to be one of the greatest players to ever wear the North Carolina Tar Heels jersey, leading the team to the Final Four in 1995, a season when he was named the National Player of the Year by Sports Illustrated and was a first-team All-American. And then, well, he played 18 seasons in the NBA. A first-round draft pick by the Philadelphia 76ers, the hype around a player commonly referred to at the time as the next Jordan was deafening, and yet he somehow was able to deliver. With more than 15,000 career points, he was one of the decade's premier offensive threats, averaging almost 17 points a game in his career. And keep in mind, that average is over almost 20 years, including a 2000 season in Detroit where he averaged 29.8 and scored 57 against the Bulls. That's still a franchise record. He's a two-time All-Star who has now taken his career to the next step, as the head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores, an SEC basketball team with more attention than ever, thanks to an impressive young roster and a high-profile coach. On this episode, I talked to Jerry Stackhouse about recruiting in a pandemic, the possible racial bias he saw against teammate Allen Iverson, the difference between Michael Jordan and LeBron's leadership approach, and the video for De La Soul's Stakes is High. It's a conversation with one of my favorite players of all time, in the sports bubble.
Call from
Jerry Stackhouse, head men's basketball coach at Vanderbilt University.
To accept, press 1. Press.
Well, I want to start off by saying I know some states have been loosening up, so I'm still asking people where you've been quarantined and with who.
I've been quarantined mostly in Nashville. I've recently come to Atlanta. I have a home there, so I've been spending a little time there trying to do a little spring cleaning. But other than that, I've been between those two places, Nashville and Atlanta.
It is crazy, too, because when I started this podcast like 3.5 months ago, it was such an easy question to ask. Where are you quarantined? Who are you with? And now it feels like even though every day we're learning that the numbers are higher and higher, we're all sort of just tiptoeing around. Is that how it feels in Atlanta as well?
Yeah, it feels, in all those places, man, I just think we almost feel like we live in a bubble that it's not really around us. And we kind of move in our own space feeling like, okay, the COVID is over there. Not where I'm at. We're seeing that the numbers are saying that that's not accurate, and we all probably need to be a little more careful than what we are. But again, in the sake of trying to get things back to some normalcy, that we all are probably trying to force the issue a little more than we should.
I agree. It does feel like we're all sort of creating our own bubbles and trying to decide, you know, it's almost like we know the experts, we know the things that are happening, but also, like every 15, 20 minutes, we're getting new information or being told certain things weren't right in the first place. And it's very hard to follow.
No doubt. I mean, it's hard to figure out what's true and what's real. I mean, like I said, they gave us some, some pretty standard things to do with the social distancing and, staying 6 feet. I mean, is that really accurate? Should we be 10? Or are we safe to be at 3? So I just think it's, so much information coming in on a daily basis, but hopefully we all stay in tune and make sure that I like listening to Dr. Fauci and the CDC, the folks that spent their whole life, committed to these type of issues. So I think they're the experts, and hopefully everyone will start trying to listen to them a little bit more.
I'm in the same boat as you are. I wanted to know how you've been passing time, and there's a reason, because considering since you were even before a teenager, preteen, I'm not sure you've went longer than a few weeks your entire life off of a basketball court or something not related to basketball, even when you were announcing. What are you doing without basketball in your life?
Well, it still revolves around basketball. For me now, it's recruiting, being able to get on Zoom calls and, you know, with potential prospects and recruits, as well as communicating with our own guys, our current guys, making sure that they're in a healthy mind state, because it's so much going on. Like the COVID is one piece of it, but, you know, with the social injustice things that are going on, things that are playing out, you know, right in front of our eyes, mm-hmm. you know, it has everybody a little more conscious and a little more awake about, you know, things and what's going on. So, I mean, I've been dealing with that, trying to figure out a way that I could, you know, be impactful. I felt like I've always tried to use my platform to give back and to be able to create opportunities for people coming forward, you know, whether that's, you know, African-Americans, different minorities, for women. You know, when you look across the my roster of my staff, you see all, you know, all ethnicities, and I think that's important. You know, people are just trying to make it a sexy thing to do right now, but, you know, I think we all have to dig a little deeper and try to have an impact. And it's tough because, I mean, with everything going on, it's just like I'm almost numb. Like, what mm-hmm. what can I do to really have an impact? I'm looking to my mentors to say, okay, this is the way that, you know, we should try to approach things. And at the same time, I know that people that look to me for some of that same leadership and making sure that I'm giving them something to be able to grow with as well. So it's just challenging times right now. But at the end of the day, we hope that we will get back to basketball and get back to some normalcy and making sure that mentally that we're prepared to do so. I mean, talking to our guys, you know, trying to, you know, make sure that they're eating right and they're still working out, because, okay, one day we're going to come out of this, and let's make sure that we're still ready to pick up and, you know, from where we left off in the spring.
Yeah. And you say that, but, you know, it's difficult to keep NBA players in shape, fit and focused. I mean, it's a little more difficult with students not being paid for their job. I mean, have you found it easy to keep tabs on your players?
Well, I mean, our guys are hungry. I think that's the pro players, but some of them, you know, they can take a stance of being more, you know, drawing the line of being a little more, I wouldn't call it militant, but just being more proactive to the social issues that are prevalent right now, you know, more so than, you know, the college kids can. I mean, they still have aspirations of attaining that type of status of being able to play at that next level. So I think they're a little bit more, you know, eager to play, a little bit more eager to get back into the gym. But I think still just being smart with it and making sure that we're giving them all the information, and more so than just the physical stuff, just the emotional support, just the mental support. And I think our guys have been in a good space. They've been doing a good job with our staff, with player development sessions, making sure that they're able to voice their opinion. And, you know, our guys are eager. They're eager to get back to campus. They're eager to get back and have an impact to do whatever. We're protesting, really smart kids, but now it's just about making sure that they channel all of that energy and the passion that they have in the right direction.
Yeah, and you brought up recruitment. I wanted to know, with you head coaching at Vanderbilt, you guys announced a big signing with a 4-star prospect, Peyton Daniels, last week. And I wonder how difficult recruiting has been for you during this completely new pandemic world. We have no real house visits, probably less scouting reports. You're depending on YouTube more. Do you feel fully equipped to do this?
Yeah, as much as anybody else. You know, it's all uncharted waters, unprecedented across the board. So I think, you know, we have, you know, we've been really proactive in getting guys on Zoom calls and FaceTime, just making sure that we're connected, maybe even more so than we would if, you know, everybody had a crack at them. You know, we maybe have a little bit of advantage because some of the guys that we've been on and we followed through the high school season, you know, a lot of other coaches hadn't been able to, you know, really see these guys all spring. You know, most of these guys going into their senior year, you know, they kind of blow up, guys that hadn't really been on the radar, mm-hmm. you know, because they played all summer and they gained that momentum going into their senior year. And so I think there's some guys that are, you know, floating under the radar, and hopefully, you know, that could kind of be an advantage for us, because, you know, we have to look at two components. We don't just look at the, you know, the athletic piece of it. The academic piece has to be important too. So we've identified guys that fit the bill for us for what we want to have on the court, but even more important, you know, how they're going to be able to function in a competitive environment, you know, academically as well.
Yeah, and you know, the way the NBA works nowadays is you can go for one season into college, or you can go overseas. And I'm wondering how much it comes up with these, you know, high school seniors about expressing concern about the tournament being canceled again or not having the full college experience and looking to overseas to just get it done and get into the NBA. Are you kind of fighting it a little harder than you used to because of the pandemic?
Well, I think for some of these kids, and I think you have to be kind of in tune, you know, and just kind of hear not only just from them and their parents, but from their, you know, support system, you know, AAU coaches, different people around them. And you can get a feel of the ones that you feel that are trending toward possibly, you know, skipping college completely. You know, the G League has offered a different opportunity for prospects to be able to maximize, you know, financially from a revenue standpoint right out of high school. So I think, you know, it's important that we figure out this name, image, and likeness in a situation sooner rather than later. So it's not that, you know, we're losing, you know, top talent to the G League or any other, you know, overseas. A lot of guys have been going overseas recently, but I think that was kind of the idea of the G League, to make sure that there was an opportunity where our talent, you know, here in the U.S. does not have to go abroad to still be able to continue to improve from the standpoint of their basketball skills and have an alternative, you know, other than college. I mean, and I'm cool with it, but I think that there's still enough of student athletes and parents who want the college experience, who want an opportunity to, you know, receive a, you know, first class education as well as, you know, compete at a high level, you know, like playing in the Power Five, playing in the SEC. So there's always going to be challenges, but I think at the same time, we're trying to battle them as well as we can.
Yeah, and you brought it up a little there. During the pandemic, some news did get a little buried that the NCAA looks like it's making, you know, headroom for college athletes to get paid for their likeness. As someone who had their UNC jersey everywhere, what do you think of that? Is that an ability you wish you had back when you saw it all over the place?
Yeah, I wonder, can we go back?
Yeah.
See if I can, you know, get some more of the you know, some of those royalties off of some of those 42 jerseys that was rolling around. But no, I just think it's we have to find a way to, you know, include our players. I mean, we're seeing it more. I mean, we're, you know, our kids, you know, whether football or basketball, at the end of the day, most of the student body is not back. But those, you know, these guys are back because they understand the importance of sport and how a lot of, you know, colleges and universities, you know, rely on their revenue. So I think we, you know, now, but up until this point, it's always been, okay, it's the universities, the coaches, everybody else. Now it's some talk about how do we include the kids? How do we include the product? You know, it's a lot of smart people that if they really wanted to figure it out, I'm pretty sure we'll be able to figure it out.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, I, as a 40-year-old man who's still obsessed with NBA jerseys, yours was the first I owned, the first professional jersey. And you had a wildly popular jersey, not only just because you were who you were, but I think the timing of rappers starting to wear jerseys and it becoming more of like a fashion trend happened at the same time you were drafted. Was that insane for you to see them everywhere as basically coming out of college?
Well, yeah, again, it's almost like you expect it somewhat because of the success of, like, you saw those North Carolina jerseys when you know, you walk in the Foot Locker and it's like, oh, that's my jersey, the 4-2. But, you know, in actuality, there really was no name on the back of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's the kind of what you see. But for me, I'm just hoping that they figure out a way to do it, because it's not hard. You know, I think it's just a matter of a lot of old rules that have been in place for so long. So it's just time for them to change. I think we're seeing that with, you know, just social injustice across the board. And believe me, a lot of the underlying issues we see there, you know, all started a long time ago with some of the same, you know, racial and social issues that we were dealing with back then that we're still facing right now.
I want to ask about that. With the country focusing on the racial divide and racism and the murder of George Floyd, do you have a plan as a head coach with your athletes to talk about how they would protest or have their voice heard in college sports?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're really listening to our players and some of the things. I mean, I actually had an exercise where I, you know, had them write a paragraph or as much as they wanted to about how they feel that they could be impactful. And we had some really good ideas from our kids. Some wanted to promote some groups on the Jumbotron before games. Some wanted to talk about, you know, actually staging a protest of some sort. And I think that's where we help them as adults. We allow them to be creative because they're really smart. But at the same time, they still need some guidance and they still need the belts to be able to help them set the table. But we have to listen to them and kind of let them, you know, steer the ship a little bit as we move forward. Because I just don't know if we change people who have been, you know, just kind of ingrained in them for most of their life. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do is try to educate this current group and the group that's coming after them. And I think that's what we're going to really see the significant change.
And I was thinking from your perspective as well, you played with Allen Iverson on the Sixers. And I constantly think about him and how the NBA treated him in the prime of his career, whether it was the dress code that was thinly veiled an attack on him or photoshopping out his tattoos on media kits and just really like categorizing him as a thug. Did you guys all notice that when it was happening? Was that something that you guys were sort of cognitive of?
Yeah, I think we were all cognizant of it, but I think there was at the same time we were cognizant of who was the major sponsors of our league. And I think, you know, David Stern, you know, he did an unbelievable job of marketing the league. And I mean, at the time, it felt like the best way to market our league and our players was to be able to, you know, present as professional. Mm-hmm. Little did we know that black culture or the culture of hip hop was even more just as, you know, prevalent to a lot of kids as, you know, seeing somebody, you know, walk up in a suit. I mean, as a kid, I mean, I enjoyed watching, knowing that once I become a professional, I could be like Michael Jordan and wear a suit to work. Mm-hmm. You know, not all kids had that same aspiration. Some guys, you know, some kids who wanted to wear baggy jeans and white t-shirts with bandanas and cornrows. That wasn't necessarily me, even though I grew up in the same neighborhood as these kids. You know, we all just are different. And I think that's what, you know, Adam has embraced that, you know, tremendously, letting guys be individual. And you see where the Russell Westbrooks and the different guys now have really taken it, you know, it's taken on a life of its own just from standpoint of fashion to where it's something now that, you know, we're all proud of, as opposed to years back that we just didn't feel like that was going to, you know, move the needle as far as marketing our players. So
yeah.
I have no fault with David Stern and his thought process at that time. It felt a little, yeah. I mean, looking at it in 2020 now, where everything is going on, you could almost say it felt somewhat racial. But at that time, being a part of it, you know, it was like, okay, you know, we were coming from a bad place in the late 70s, early 80s, where we were, was thought of as a drug league, and, you know, with, you know, cocaine use, you know, running rampant within our league. So there was had to be some efforts to clean that up.
Yeah.
And I think we cleaned that up and became one of the $8 to $10 billion industry. So you got to give credit where it's due, but at the same time, I think it's, we're seeing now that there could have been a little more balance there.
Yeah, and I also want to go on record. I'm not proud of all of Westbrook's outfits. I'm proud of some of them.
Me either.
Okay, all right. Just as long as we're on the same page. You left UNC early for the draft, but you promised your mom and Dean Smith you would graduate, which you did. You had a degree in African-American studies. I think one of the things that a lot of Americans are surprised by, especially white America, is just the whitewashing of our mainstream history books. Most people had never heard of Juneteenth until an episode of Atlanta or this past week, or the Tulsa Massacre until they saw it on Watchmen on HBO. With your education and with your background in sort of this subject, how could this be changed? Is this the time that we finally get a middle school with Juneteenth in their history book? Is that possible now?
I hope so. I hope that's the next phase of bringing together one history book. I think there's been a push for people to try to promote, you know, more an African-American history book. And I push against that. I'd rather it be a combination of our history, you know, and to the point that we're, it's all combined. I mean, if we really tell the true story, I mean, we know the story that we read, you know, about 1620, Christopher Columbus coming over on the Mayflower and all that, but they need to talk about what, you know, what really happened. You know what I'm saying? How, when they came over on the Mayship, what did they do? Who did they take it away from? So I think when we, you know, stop trying to hide behind all of that and really tell the truth, then we'll be able to really embrace the history on, from both sides.
When you were in college and you were learning that stuff, did you have these eye-opening moments that kind of the rest of America's having now with Juneteenth and these sort of terms and things that you guys have faced as a race?
Man, I never heard of Juneteenth until about, 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
So, I mean, honestly, it's just never something that was, it wasn't in the history books that I read. Hmm. And I think that's the problem. I can sing the jingle right now in my head. The year 1620, the pilgrims came over, the good ship Mayflower brought them across the sea. That was a thing that they were embedding in our head that was, should not be a proud part of our history.
More with former NBA star and current Vanderbilt men's basketball head coach Jerry Stackhouse after this. Right now, Feeding America is working tirelessly to ensure our most vulnerable populations, like students who are out of school, the elderly, individuals whose jobs are impacted, and low-income families, continue to have access to food and other needed resources during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Feeding America Food Bank Network is committed to serving communities and people facing hunger in America, and their greatest need is donations and support of local food banks. This podcast is committed to donating a portion of the proceeds from the show to Feeding America, and we hope that you can join us in this effort too. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org/COVID-19. Now, back to my chat with the great Jerry Stackhouse. You got some headlines this past month about playing with Michael Jordan during his Wizard comeback. And I know you got a much older version of him, but I wanted to know, as someone who played with MJ and LeBron, what were the biggest differences in their abilities to lead when you compare them?
Well, I think it's just different leadership styles. Man, there's no one way. Mm-hmm. And I think that, Michael was just, he was driven. I mean, and he pushed the envelope. He pushed it hard. And it was just like he was almost manic at how he approached things. And I think LeBron was the same way, but he just decided to have a little more fun. I played with him, and just, seeing him in practice, he was just, he was jovial. When the lights came on, did he lock in and he get serious? Absolutely. But he wanted to enjoy his teammates. He wanted to enjoy his experience. And I think that, it shows that both ways can work. Obviously, he has tremendous success and probably, arguably one of the greatest players in the history of the game. But I think Michael, his fans is like, okay, you want to be staunch in everything that you do. You just want to be driven. And he showed that to the point of sometimes alienating some teammates or even in some ways maybe abusing some teammates. But I think depending on your perspective or who you're a fan of, you kind of side on one way or the other.
Would you say you were friends with LeBron, and would you say you were friends with Jordan when you played with him?
Yes. Yeah, I was friends with both. I think I had dinners with LeBron and his crew and Michael and kind of his entourage of guys that was there with him. We went to dinner. We enjoyed each other, enjoyed our company and our time together. On the court, I think people tend to think that goes together. Just because you don't have necessarily a great chemistry on the court doesn't mean that we're arch rivals and just couldn't get along and have dinner and have laughs or go up to his room and play cards or whatever. But I just think when you speak honestly, most people just try to lie because of players, great players and iconic players, and they just want to make sure that they don't go against the narrative of what they think that those icons want to hear. But I can only speak my truth and what I saw and my perspective of what happened. And that's the truth I'm going to always tell.
Sure. Well, you're now coaching Scottie Pippen Jr., and I figured that has to be an honor for Scottie Sr. to respect your game enough to encourage his son to attend the school and learn under you. Is that something you kind of took as an honor?
No, Scottie's always been a big fan, man. When he was on ESPN and I was up for some NBA jobs, Scottie was always really pushing because he had seen me work. He had seen my path, seen how I kind of grinded to get to that point. And then all of a sudden I get the job at Vanderbilt and come to find out that his son had committed. So it was like, obviously he could have left and went anywhere that he wanted to because it was a coaching change. But, it was like, oh, nah. This was, perfect for my son. And then for him to come in and have the year that he had last year.
Yeah.
With not being on anybody's really radar, I think he was a three-star athlete. He wasn't on any preseason you know, SEC freshman team, and all of a sudden he comes in and make all freshman team, and he learns so much. And I think he's going to be really, really good. I'm hoping he get those 5 inches in between his freshman and sophomore year like Scotty did.
Yeah.
Then,
you know, that would be good.
If that happens, then it's a wrap, because he has pro talent, and I just think that's once his body catches up with it, then, you know, you see Scotty Jr. playing the pros as well.
I love it. I've loved watching him on YouTube. You had a Vanderbilt player, Aaron Naismith, who declared for the NBA. He's likely a lottery pick. And you hope for guys like him that these leagues get back into shape after COVID. We are talking a couple hours after DeAndre Jordan has come out as positive to COVID. Spencer Dinwiddie as well. They're dropping pretty much a couple a day out of the league because of it. When you read these Disney World plans and positive tests, would you feel comfortable if you were still playing in the NBA to join this season?
Well, I just know the importance of playing the season. I think that's what these guys have to understand, not only just the emotion and the everything that goes on. It was just there's a clause that's in their contract, their collectively bargained contract, that if they don't play the season, then there's an opportunity for the owners to really open up everything and could change percentages and everything as far as how these guys go moving forward. So, you know, it's just more than, there's some risks here. And I think that the league, you know, Adam, you know, he's working with some of the foremost scientists and doctors to make sure that they're trying to cover as many bases as they can. I mean, you hear these, you know, one, two off, maybe even three cases of COVID. I mean, that's expected. We understand that. And it's just about how do we navigate around it. I mean, the reality of it is, you know, in the finals, if LeBron James gets the COVID, you know, he's not going to finish the finals. Yeah, but I think it's still worth getting back out there and trying to do it, because the whole is much greater than the parts.
Yeah, that contract is something that comes up and has to be thought of, obviously, beyond a lot of just the sickness questions. But I guess we usually end with something a little more serious than something very stupid. But my stupid one this week, I feel like might be pretty important. But I wanted to know, when you're coaching these kids, they have the rare opportunity to play with one of the best players, in my opinion, of all time, an incredible basketball player in Jerry Stackhouse. What is the question they ask you the most about your NBA experience? What is it from your life that you're questioned the most about by the players?
I don't know, man. I think it's, you know, it's different kids have different questions. I mean, guys obviously want to understand, you know, how I played so long. You know, I think that's one of the things I talked about, you know, is because I was able to, you know, reinvent myself. I came in as a high draft pick, you know, as a young star in the league, became an all-star. And then during the next phase of my career, I came off the bench, you know, had different roles as more of a locker room guy, even though I still played, you know, my final year, but I was really brought in to be more of a mentor for younger guys. So I think that's the way you have longevity, is to continue to reinvent yourself and not get so locked in as to I'm this or I'm that. You know, you could be this or you could be that right now, but know that, you know, that can change. And unfortunately, in basketball and in professional sports, they're all fungible assets. You know, the new ones are coming eventually. So no matter how long you go, and I was able to play 18 years, Vince just, you know, set a record of playing 22. But at the end of the day, the 22 is over.
That's not fair to compare. He's not a human being. It's an actual robot that you're comparing yourself to.
Hey, man. So it's, hey, 18 isn't a whole lot, a long way from 22.
Not at all. Not at all.
And then I think it's just as a mindset. I was ready to go on to the next phase. I feel like I probably could have played 4 more years in a similar role that he did, but it was more about probably trying to win. I mean, he really embraced us, you know. But I don't know if I would have had as much interest playing for the Atlanta Hawks at that stage of my career, especially right. The fact that neither one of us was able to win a championship. You know, it got close, but still, I would have been trying to still strive to get a ring. Mm-hmm. But to each his own. I think what he did and how he mentored those young guys is admirable, and obviously doesn't do anything to tarnish his, you know, Hall of Fame career from my standpoint.
Sure. Well, lastly, as a hip-hop head, I wanted to ask you about something that I think about all the time, which is one of the greatest rap songs of all time, De La Soul's Stakes Is High. You show up in the video, you play basketball against De La. What do you remember from that day of shooting what's a classic music video?
Man, I just remember it was fun just being able to know that I kind of arrived. You know, here I come from, you know, a country boy from North Carolina to now I'm in a De La Soul video. And it was cool, man. I got a chance to meet those guys and, you know, I met Common. He was a young guy in the rap game at the time. And we just started vibing and you see how his career is taking off. And to know that you know, form relationships with guys in so many different basketball has, you know, brought a lot of people together. But you know, it was definitely fun, man. Make sure I can look back and see myself with a little bit of hair. It's always cool to look back and reflect on that video.
Well, we were all watching it wearing your jersey. Jerry, thanks so much for talking to me and stay safe and look forward to seeing your team back out on the court.
Thank you, man. I really enjoyed it.
The Sports Bubble is produced and distributed by Treefort Media. The show is executive produced by Kelly Garner, Lisa Ammerman, Matthew Kugler, and me, Jensen Karp. Tom Monahan is our senior audio engineer and sound supervisor, with production and editing by Jasper Leek. Additional production help from Tim Schauer, June Rosen, and Haley Mandelberg. Our theme music is composed by Spilkus. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please subscribe, rate us, and review us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please visit feedingamerica.org. If you're able to make a donation, any amount makes a difference, and you can learn more about other ways you can help on their website. For more information on the Sports Bubble, links to the socials, and for show transcripts for our hearing impaired listeners, go to treefort.fm. Be safe and be well. The Sports Bubble is a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.